Today, Australia's perfect housing storm. Let's talk stress results. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is posts covering finance and property news. Well, this is the second in our series of posts relating to the property market at the moment. The other day, I made a show called Australia's Perfect Housing Storm. Let's talk scenarios. And I went through the scenarios of pretty much everywhere other than Tasmania, which I'm going to cover today. And on Tuesday in our live show at 8 p.m. Sydney, we're going to dive into the postcodes. And if you've got a postcode you want to discuss, come on the live stream, ask me then, and I'll give you the results for particular postcodes. Because, of course, this is an important story at the postcode level, because different properties in different locations and different households are actually performing very differently. But the overall tenor of this is now getting pretty serious, I think. And so the articles at the moment are following on from that. Interestingly, Jacqueline Maley wrote this very interesting article talking about the question is, do you really want home prices to go down? Citing Chalmers from last Sunday, talking about softening, but we're not aiming for a particular aggregate outcome of price or percentage. And it's also worth highlighting again that there is a significant set of pressures on households, not least, as AMP highlighted, that it takes a long, long time now to save for a deposit. As AMP said, she calculated how long it was going to take an average earner to save for a 20% deposit for a medium-priced home. In 1983, it took 3.5 years. By the year 2000, it had climbed to 5.7 years. Today, it is 11 years. And if it continues to rise at the same rate by the middle of the 2050s, it would take 24 years to save for a deposit. Oh, and the median house price in that dystopian future would be $6.2 million. So clearly, affordability is a problem. And yes, we do need home prices to fall, as I've said previously. It's also worth highlighting in this article, she makes the point that housing is not just about wealth accumulation. It's a base, it's a sanctuary where we can raise children and where we can put down roots in the community. Housing security is the bedrock of all functions of a happy society. Civil society is impossible without it, and if younger generations can't trust that they can get in to achieve it, they won't trust much else either. And that's the point. This is broader than just house prices. Another angle here in this article, wages stall as costs rise. And this is making the point that households' mortgage bills, energy costs, and other living expenses have skyrocketed, but fewer than one in five adults have got a pay rise in the last year. That's according to a poll from finder.com.au that showed 82% of Aussies failed to secure a meaningful pay rise by the start of this financial year. And many said they actually took a pay cut. Of course, the costs of living are crazy. Inflation is quite high. And that means that it's very tough for many people. Aussies are working just as hard as a year ago, but finding their pay didn't stretch as far. And this year's pay rise, if they got one, simply hasn't been enough to keep up with the cost of living, the article says. And interestingly here, there is a bit of a spruik in the tale, suggesting that people can pull equity out of their property to pay off other debts like car loans. And we're seeing a lot of that in our surveys at the moment. Households are doing that, but of course they're running out of runway because now property prices are beginning to fall. I'm talking about property price falls. Well, this article shows that there are drops, significant drops, $300,000 in some suburbs where home and unit values are falling. And this article focuses on suburbs of Sydney's east where prices have fallen by $300,000 or more. And they talk about property types, both houses and apartments, where Coogee, for example, had the biggest fall by dollar value, down $448,508 or 9.5%. in just 3 months. And they're talking about other places. Houses in Chifley, about 13 kilometres southeast of the CDB, have seen a fall of 11.1% or $298,000. And in the Inner East, in Balmain, a 10.5% fall, around $399,000. And in Kensington, in the East, 10.3% down or $351,000. That's whole houses. For units, there are examples too, falls of 8.3%, or looking at Double Bay, down 7.8%, or $154,000, and Vaucluse, down 7.8%, or $128,000. And yes, it's a buyer's market at the moment, but buyers have a breather, so no sense of urgency. Another article just highlighting again the risks of negative equity across Australia. John Rolfe and Ryan Keane wrote this article and included, interestingly, some data that I provided relating to the risks from defaults. And here we go into a bit more detail. Data from consulting firm Digital Finance Analytics shows the Melbourne postcode covering Cranbourne has the largest number of households at default risk, more than 4% of owners. We're going to touch on that later. Of course, Cranbourne has been in my headline of analysis for some time, so no real surprise there. Now, turning to auction clearance rates, well, the Fin Review came out with the headline, "Auction Clearance Rates Slump as Buyers Get Cold Feet." So they said the auction clearance rate dropped below 50% nationally for the third week in a row, as falling prices kept buyers on the sidelines. As the market cools, the average number of people attending home inspections is falling, a forward indicator of a softening in buyer appetite. In Perth, that attendance figure has fallen to 1.8, down from 6.1 a year ago. That's according to Ray White. And in Sydney and Melbourne, home inspection averages were at 1.8 and 1.9, respectively, half of what they were a year ago. Now, according to Decatality, this week's preliminary success rate or clearance rate was 49.8%, compared to 49.2% a week earlier. That figure, by the way, was later revised down to 45% after the final tally, according again to Catality. And the true clearance, which I calculate comparing listings to sold, came in at a low 38.7%. The rise in interest rates this year and concerns about the broader economy have definitely dampened buyer sentiment, with Labour's abolition of tax breaks for property investors further cooling the market. Prices are falling at an increasing rate in the two biggest markets of Sydney and Melbourne, while growth is easing off significantly in Perth, Brisbane and Adelaide. Adding to the gloomy outlook is the traditional winter slowdown. In the auction market, Cotality recorded a 17.2% drop in auction listings over the previous week's volumes nationally at 1,447, and listings were 90% lower than the corresponding week last year. Louis Christopher over at SQM Research said that the seasonal reduction in listings, clearance rates, etc. would typically edge up, but we're not getting that. Auction clearance rates are still very weak, he said. That's the state of the market. And so this weakness is translating into ongoing price falls. There is no evidence at all at this time that the market's bottoming out or easing off in its decline. There'll be a point in time when the shock and awe comes to an end. We're not there yet. And there are still some dark clouds on the horizon, in the sense that in 30 days' time, we'll probably see listing volumes start to rise again ahead of spring. And that's likely to put further downward pressure on auction clearance rates from here. If anything, in this cycle, we're getting towards the end of the beginning, but certainly not the beginning of the end. In Melbourne, even with auction listings down 27.9% on the previous week, the preliminary success rate was just 54.6%. That's the sixth straight week of a clearance rate below 6%, and true clearances came in at 42.3%. Sydney's preliminary clearance rate was 51.6%, with a true clearance of 40.5%, while in Brisbane, the initial clearance rate was just 23.8%. That's the lowest in 6 years, again, according to Catality. And the true clearance is just 20%. Adelaide posted a 45.7% clearance rate, with a true clearance of 33.3%. And in Perth, there were only 9 houses put up for auction, so the clearance calculation is pretty meaningless at 33.3%. And the true clearance of 11.1%. And of course, these clearance rates anyway are just a bit of noise, as I've discussed many times, but of course it's all about clickbait, really. And another angle relates to credit. Interestingly, the growth in housing credit for investors has been very, very strong. Investors, of course, have been supporting prices for some time, but now we are seeing a little bit of an easing insofar that Housing credit, which accounts for 62% of total credit stock, ticked down to 0.5% over a month, a pace not seen for 10 months. And that means that the growth rate was 0.54%, representing an 11 basis point decline from the prior month. And the mix of housing credit growth can just show that investor activity outpaced owner-occupied demand. However, both components slowed. Owner-occupied credit was up 0.4% over the month. That's the slowest growth in more than a year. Investor credit growth eased to 0.8% over the month after 2 months at 0.9%, which was also the average pace over the past 6 months. On a year-end basis, investor credit still continued to expand at a double-digit pace, up 10.3%, while owner-occupied growth was unchanged at 6.2%. And the point here, of course, is that credit growth is very strongly correlated to home price growth. If credit is expanding, that lifts home prices. If the growth in credit is slowing, that tends to put a brake on home price because people can't grab as much credit. And that means they can't pay as much, and that tends to drive prices lower. Oh, and by the way, just another angle here, which is worth noting, the OECD has come out and highlighted that the government is very much raiding tax, both personal income tax and corporate profits, to support their spending at a much higher rate, according to the OECD, at 62.1%, well above the 36.4% average for advanced economies, which once again suggests that the settings here in Australia are not great. So it's now time to turn to the latest results from our analysis. Remember that we are rolling this forward from our core market model. And just for those who have not seen it before or need to be reminded again, this is the core analytic tool that we use at Digital Finance Analytics. We have a rolling household survey. There are 52,000 households in this survey at any one time. A lot of information in there. And we slice and dice the data on a different basis for different pieces of analysis. It's a bit like a Rubik's Cube. There are lots of different things we can look at. But one of the critical ones is mortgage stress, and we'll come on to the definition of that in just a second. And we can also look at the various scenarios, of course, looking ahead where things may go. And for those who didn't catch our earlier show, check that out for the detailed analysis of our scenarios and our definitions of scenarios, because it is quite important to understand that these are actually sensitivity analyses, not projections. So we have three scenarios at the moment. The best case, which I call the still tough case, where rates don't go up any higher. We have a base case where the rates rise again. I've called that hard times. And the nightmare scenario, the worst case, where rates go even higher, up to 4.85%, and we get stagflation. So those are the three scenarios that we use. And just quickly, here is an example across the whole of Australia. In the best case scenario, home prices go pretty much sideways over the next 3 years, but the base case would be a fall of 13.8% over 3 years, and the worst case a fall of 33.6%. And units would follow on, although not fall quite as much. In the worst case, units would fall about 29%. Now, I did not cover Tasmania last time. Apologies for that. So here it is. For those who asked for it, thank you for all of those who sent me a message afterwards saying, where's Tassie? So in the best case scenario, we see Tasmanian house prices falling 6.8% over the next 3 years and down 1.1% over the next 12 months. In the base case, down 21.3% over 3 years. And in the worst case scenario, houses down 41.1% over 3 years. And units would tend to follow on, falling perhaps a little less and down 18.5% and 35.7% in the base and worst case scenarios. And also we can look at different segments as well, cohorts with different characteristics. And of course, I covered the young growing family group last time. So showing that houses could fall 5% over the next 3 years, difficult for those with the new mortgages with the 5% deposit, they could be negative equity. The base case down 19.6%. And the worst case down 39.3%. Another one to look at here would be the suburban mainstream. This is mainstream Australia. And here in the best case, yes, there could be small rises, 12.1% over the next 12 months and 1.7% rises over the next 3 years. But in the base case, a fall of 13.8% over 3 years. And in the worst case, a fall of 32.6% over the next 3 years. That's for houses. Give you a bit of a sensitivity range. And the point I want to make is that different household cohorts have very different characteristics and therefore tend to behave differently, particularly with the interest rate environments that we've now got at the moment. And with all of these things, of course, there is always a lot of different dynamics in different locations, different cash flow pressures. But overall, the cash flow pressures become very important over time, because over time, households' ability to be able to deal with the pressures get worse, which takes us then to our stress analysis. And just on that, what we do is we take the mortgage stress data from our postcode surveys. We look at the price trajectory and history, the buying and selling intentions, the migration statistics, the economic data as well, put it all into the core market model and produce these scenarios and pieces of analysis at the postcode level. We can roll it to the region and the state and all Australia level. And what we're going to spend time on today is looking at the stress results at the top line level, but also down at the postcodes. Oh, and by the way, if you are interested in having a one-to-one conversation with me about a particular suburb or postcode, I can do that through our one-to-one service. This is quite a popular service at the moment. It's not financial advice, but it is analysis at the postcode level. I can look at the stress data, the home price trend data, and form a view of where things may go based on our modelling. And that is a conversation about an hour via Zoom or phone. And if you are interested, you can book, but there is a price to this service, a lot of work to be done to put it all together. And if you're interested, you can contact me by the DFA blog. We're booking 3 to 5 weeks ahead at the moment because there's a lot of demand. So let's talk stress now. There are many different ways of defining stress. Some people use 30% of income, not sure sometimes whether it's 30% of gross income or whether it's post-tax income. Others use underwriting metrics like the banks do, but we define stress in simple cash flow terms, money in, money out. If you've got more money going out than money coming in, and I exclude one-off discretionary things like going on holiday, for example, then we define households as stressed. They've got a mortgage, they're in mortgage stress. If renting, they're in rental stress. Investors can also have stress too. They'd be stressed investors if cash flow pressures exist. And we can look at this at a postcode level to look at the total financial stress at the postcode level, which is an aggregate of mortgage stress and rental stress and investor stress. We can talk in percentage of households and counts. Generally, I tend to look at counts because I think the law of big numbers is a better view of what's going on. And I come back to this chart quite often because this is the RBA spectrum of household financial stress from some time ago. They talk about the difference between mild stress and severe stress and how the intensity of financial stress varies over the years, which is absolutely right. We go from mild budget pressures at the start of the process. You might miss payments later and ultimately insolvency. Now, insolvency is still quite low at the moment, although it's ticking up, but the risks of insolvency ahead is definitely growing. I measure stress at this mild end, at the budget pressure end, because when you look at people here, some of them will migrate across. And over time, this process can take 3 to 5 to 7 years. So this is a long-term process for households. When we measure it at this mild end, we're looking at the top of the hopper, as it were. But it's a very important leading indicator of trouble later, as we will see. This is the data to the end of June 2026. And you can see here that we have a rental stress ticking up to 75.5%. We have mortgage stress, which is up at 53.2%. It rose quite a lot post the recent rate rises. And also the RBA's debt to income ratio updated to the end of March was 177.7. That's a meaningless number because they include all households, not just those with a mortgage. If you did the calculation on those households, actually the true number would be closer to 6 times income. And for many new borrowers, we're looking at 6, 7, and 8 times. So the story here is 3/4 of people in the rental sector have cash flow pressures, and more than half of people in the mortgage sector have cash flow pressures. And these are pretty much at all-time highs and are likely to continue. So let's look at the June 2026 top-level results. And I have highlighted here in yellow where there are movements up from last month. And I want to focus here on those trajectories on the upside because there are quite a few of them. So you can see it across the ACT, all dimensions saw an increase: mortgage stress, rental stress, investor stress, and financial stress. In New South Wales, there was little change to mortgage stress, but rental stress was up and overall financial stress was up as a result of that. In the Northern Territories, mortgage stress was higher. In Queensland, mortgage stress, rental stress, investor stress, and financial stress all rose. In South Australia, rental stress rose. In Tasmania, all dimensions rose: mortgage stress, rental stress, investor stress, and financial stress. In Victoria, rental stress, investor stress, and financial stress rose. Western Australia, it was rental stress, investor stress, and financial stress. In terms of mortgage stress, it's worth noting that there was no change. That was perhaps because we are still seeing some delays on the payment increases which are coming through thanks to the recent rate increases. They haven't yet landed. But it is worth just dwelling slightly more on this. If we look at overall mortgage stress at 53.2%, that translates to 2 million households with mortgage stress out of the 10 million households in the Australian household population. At 75.5% of rental stress, well, that translates to more than 2.355 million households in rental stress out of the 10 million. Investor stress at 18% is more than 543,000 investors with cash flow problems, one of the reasons why more are selling. And overall financial stress, the aggregate measure at 50.7%, means that more than 5 million households out of the 10 million have cash flow pressures. So this is a big and building set of issues. They've been building for some time, but I would suggest that we are close now to a bit of a turning point in terms of the real impact on real households getting significantly worse. Now let's look at the cohorts or the segments, and we analyze this same data at a cohort or segment level. And you can see here that the young growing family segment has the highest percentage of mortgage stress, 93%. That's around 331,000 households in that young growing family group. That includes a lot of first-time buyers and a lot of households with 5% deposits recently who are in difficulty. If we look at the rental stress story, it spread quite widely across all the cohorts. But the standout one for me is the 84.2% of households in our multicultural establishment. These are the first generation migrants coming into Australia, around 197,000 households in rental stress in this cohort with difficulty. So a lot of people are coming to Australia and immediately getting themselves into financial difficulty because of finding somewhere to live. But other cohorts too are up in the 80s as well, whether we look at the mature stable families or whether we look at young growing families. So far as stressed investors are concerned, no real surprise to see that the more affluent households who have the greatest portfolio of investment properties are most exposed. 30.6% of the exclusive professionals, the most wealthy households, who have the highest representation of investment properties, and indeed the young affluents, 28%, also exposed. And you can see here that 83,000 properties from investors in the exclusive professional segment are effectively underwater. No surprise then that we see more properties being sold. Let's move on and quickly talk about the top postcodes. Firstly, we're going to look at mortgage stress. This is sorted by the count in mortgage stress rather than the percentage. I've told you that I think the count is a better representation. So the top pain point at the moment this month was Liverpool, postcode 2170, with more than 14,700 households in mortgage stress. Then we go to Western Australian, postcode 6065, Wanneroo. Then we go to Toowoomba in Queensland, 4350. So we have Liverpool in New South Wales, Wanneroo in Western Australia, and regional Queensland all caught in the top three. Then back to Campbelltown in New South Wales, 2560. Then Craigieburn and Donnybrook and Roxburgh Park in Victoria, 3064. Of course, that was on the high default rate, as we'll see shortly. Then followed by Fountain Gate, Narrawarren South, etc. Postcode 3805 in Victoria. Then we go to Camden in New South Wales, 2570. Then Pakenham in Victoria, 3810. Berwick and Harkaway in Victoria, 3806. Ballarat in Victoria, 3350. Riverston in New South Wales, 2765. Merewa in Western Australia, 6030. And Talnet in Victoria, 3029. So a lot of Victorian postcodes in the top few. And what we generally see is these high-stress postcodes are high-growth corridors, a lot of new properties, a lot of first-time buyers, a lot of highly mortgaged households who are very much exposed at the moment. Unfortunately, the home and land packages in a lot of these areas have attracted a lot of grief for people subsequent to their completion and purchase. We then look at risk of default. So this is now our forward modelling based on our analysis of the proportion and number of households risking default, missing a payment, over the next year. Top of the list is Cranbourne, 3977, 1,259 households there risking default. Then Hoppers Crossing in Victoria. Then Success in Western Australia, Roxburgh Park in Victoria, Armidale in Western Australia, Toowoomba in Queensland, Derrimount in Victoria, and then Gosford on the Central Coast in New South Wales with 591. Then Cooma in Queensland, Wanneroo in Western Australia, Pacific Pines in Queensland, Bundaberg in Queensland, and Mount Pleasant in Queensland, 4740 around Mackay. And even there, 500 households, or 3.7% of households, are risking default over the next 12 months. And I would highlight that the percentages do vary, but we're seeing in some cases 4 and 5% of households in these areas risking default. Now let's turn to rental stress. And here we're looking again at the count of rental stress. Melbourne postcode 3000 is at the top of the list with more than 15,000 households in rental stress at 84%. Then Toowoomba in Queensland, followed by Liverpool in New South Wales, Southport in Queensland, Tarnet in Victoria, Campbelltown in New South Wales, Zetland postcode 2017 in New South Wales, and then Cooma in Queensland, Ipswich in Queensland 4305, Westmead in New South Wales, 2145. Blacktown in New South Wales, 2148. Mount Druitt, postcode 2770. Gosford, 2250. Millers Point, the centre of the harbour around the rocks and Millers Point. And then Harris Park and Parramatta, over in Parramatta, 2150. And I would highlight again that in some of these postcodes where we've got 13, 11, 10,000, 9,000 households all exposed, a high proportion in some cases up towards the 90s. If we then look at stressed investors, Cranbourne, postcode 3977, is again at the top of the list with 21% of investors there having difficulties. And going down the list, Westmead in New South Wales, Beckenham in Western Australia, 6107, Southport in Queensland, 4215. Kareen in Western Australia, 6020. Hornsby, New South Wales, 2077. Bundaberg in Queensland, 4670. Beaumont Hills in New South Wales, 2115. Toowoomba in Queensland, 4350. Lane Cove in New South Wales, 2660. Surrey Hills in New South Wales, 2010. Carnegie in Victoria, 3163. Glen Iris in Victoria, 3146. And DY in New South Wales, 2099. And you can see that the percentages vary, with some up around 53%, like in the Western Australian postcode there, down to the mid-30s and 20s in other postcodes. And finally, we look at financial stress. So this is the aggregate measure. This is the overall number of households at 48,000, with 29,000 in financial stress in Toowoomba, postcode 4350 there at the top of the list. And that's 61% of households in that postcode. Then Liverpool with 29,000 households. Campbelltown with 25,000 households. Donnybrook and Roxburgh Park with 20,000 households. Hoppers Crossing and Tarnet with, again, 20,000 households. Cranbourne in Victoria, 3977 with 18,000. Ipswich in Queensland with 17,000. Melbourne, centre of Melbourne, 3,000 with 17,000. And then Belbird Park, Queensland, 4300, Wanneroo in Western Australia, Ballarat in Victoria, Mount Druitt in New South Wales, Southport in Queensland, Pakenham in Victoria, and Camden in New South Wales. And even in Camden and New South Wales, down the bottom of the list there, with 16,000 households in financial stress at 74%. So what you can see here is that there are some significant differences across different postcodes with different dynamics going on in different locations, which of course then takes us to the need to go granular. And just to remind you again, we do this analysis down at the postcode level. This is the Wollongong postcode. I won't go through this in detail now, but you can see there that we're looking at things like the proportion of people borrowing and renting, the mortgage stress levels, the scenarios in terms of where prices might move, the gross investment, net investment yields, and other data as well. But very importantly, the disposable monthly income is the critical metric here. So what income is coming into the household after tax, and what proportion is then going out onto the mortgage? And here in this postcode, the average mortgage at 40.9% of disposable monthly income is $2,467 a month, and 33.1% at $1,993 a month going on the typical rent. Those are huge amounts, which is why so many households are in significant difficulty. Now, if you're interested in having a conversation about a particular postcode, you can go to the one-on-one conversation, or indeed, you can join us on the live show on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney. Throw the postcode in the chat during that live stream, and I can then give you the one-page summary of what's going on. If you are interested in having a more detailed, granular look at the data, you can access this also via our Patreon program. There are a number of different membership levels. Thank you for all of those who support us. But if you subscribe at US $50 a month level, you can then get the data for the more than 2,000 postcodes that we update each month. And that information will be sent out in a couple of weeks for June. The May data is already available. So if you'd like to get hold of all of that data immediately, you can contact me via Patreon. Links are below here. And you can subscribe, and for as long as you're subscribed, you can get the updated information for every single month. It allows you to compare different postcodes across the country on all of those dimensions and a few others too. Now, just before I go, I just want to make the point that the National Debt Hotline, 1-800-007-007, is a very important source of help for those people with significant pressures. In fact, they've just reported in their latest results that they've had the busiest year ever with 183,000 calls to the helpline, plus a bunch of others using chat and other things too. And they make the point that more and more people who are in work are actually struggling. So they're seeing some of the characteristics changing between the people who used to get into financial difficulty and those who now, a lot of people these days have a full income or two, and yet are still struggling to keep ends together. I think that's something which we see in our surveys now more than ever before. And just to remind you that they did say earlier on that if they can provide help, financial counselling at work, 74% can avoid legal action, 69% are more positive about the future, 66% resolve their financial difficulties, 63% improve their mental well-being, 53% avoid bankruptcy, and 45% improve their physical health. Now, one of the things I say quite often is that it's really important for people to get to grips with their own finances. A lot of people, unfortunately, still don't really know where they precisely are. So one of my observations is it's really important to build a cash flow so you understand where the money's coming in, where it's going out, so you can prioritize and essentially make better decisions. Just piling more money into bigger loans, or worse, raiding equity in your property again and again and again, creates a bigger problem down the track, and that is a significant issue for many people. Or to make the other interesting point that we're seeing now, the bank of mum and dad shutting up shop because the bank of mum and dad are now worried that the equity in their property could get squeezed ahead, so they are less able to provide help to their kids, which is another reason why this feedback loop of falling home prices could accelerate further from this point. Now, just finally, if you are in financial pressure and you want a tool to try and help diagnose what's going on, this particular tool from AFCA is brilliant. It's a statement of financial position tool where you can complete some fields, you can take the form and you can download it and print it off and take it to your lender or indeed to a financial counselor or for your own use, because it's a very, very powerful way of looking at where your finances are. I do continue to believe that we can't rely on the government to bail out households. I do think home prices will fall further. Question is how much further. But these financial pressures are not going away soon. Inflation is still stubbornly high. The RBA is likely to lift rates rather than not, according to my scenarios at least. And I believe that we're going to see more pressure ahead. So it becomes ever more important for people to get their arms around their own finances and make better decisions. Unfortunately, many people are still being allured to believe that property prices only ever go up. Well, they clearly don't only ever go up. They can go down. And that somehow, magically, the government is going to click their fingers and solve the magic problem. No, they're not. This is going to be something which is going to grind over a long, long time. More households are going to get into difficulty, so you need to get control of your own finances. Now, on Tuesday, I'll go into the postcode detail. I hope you join us for that. And if you have specific postcodes that you would like to include, again, come on live. I'm not going to have a chance to do any work beforehand. I'm too busy doing other stuff at the moment. But if you come on live, I can definitely make sure that your postcode is included in the discussion on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney. Bottom line is this. Households are in financial pressure thanks to government policy, high house prices, high inflation, and things are going to continue to go in the wrong direction for some time yet, which means that households need to take hold of their own finances and pull things into shape on their own bat. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.